Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, March 1st. Sorry, got a little thrown off there. We are missing my bumper bed, so we're doing our best to make it work. You might have thought there was a huge studio audience in the show today. We need to work on that, see if we can make that happen. I'm going to be joined, at least in the studio, not only by Ethan here running the board, but my good friend Jason Hall here soon. And Jason probably on his way down from the state's capital right now to Lexington, about a 40-minute drive. He taking one for the team, getting up early and coming in, Lenten sacrifice and all that. But he made me promise that we wouldn't talk about politics. He's tired of talking about politics. And today's Super Tuesday, of course, which I thought would be the perfect topic, but I can understand it. I mean, that's what he deals with all the time. So anyway, we may see if we can get a word or two out of him on that. But we're going to also play a new game with him today, which is called something like Virtue in the Movies. As I've said, one of the things that I love best about Hollywood when it does things right is that when it portrays authentic goodness at whatever level, in relationships and acts of service and heroism and all the rest, of what tends to get me and get my emotions. So we're going to play a game here a little bit later where I have a bunch of slips of paper and an old powdered lemonade can, and with a different virtue. No, we're not talking about the classical virtues, okay? We're not, Aristotle's or in the Catholic faith's cardinal virtues. We're just talking about various examples of human conduct and relationships, and we'll be drawing a slip of paper out of there as we go to a break, which will give us a little time to think. And we'll each have a different one. We'll have to come up with a movie that best typifies that. And this, we would welcome your calls as well anytime during the program. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a response on Facebook or on Twitter. My buddy Jason Hall in the studio slipping in. Jason, good morning.
Just in the nick of time.
Just in the nick of time. Are you feeling rested?
No, not really. No, the reason I'm cutting it so close, I had to stop and get coffee because I know people in your audience probably don't believe this, but you do not have a pot of coffee ready for me.
I know.
When I arrived for the
we
show.
We should. Should have had a razor ready for you, too.
Yeah. It's radio.
It's radio. That's it. I haven't shaved yet either this morning, so we have that rugged look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Clooney and us. That's the way I look at it. Anyway, I know you went to bed last night excited about getting early and getting down here.
Yes, indeed.
Kind of like when I was in college. I used to get excited when I lived in the dorm because we had this great breakfast buffet. I would get excited about breakfast when I went to bed that night. That's how weird I am.
That is pretty weird.
I know.
I sat down last night, was going to catch up on some TV shows, and fell asleep immediately in my recliner. So
Just wait. Wait till you become an old married man. That's going to become old hat, falling asleep.
Well, I do it all the time anyway now. So
that's exactly right. By the way, I finally started watching Better Call Saul. You've only seen one episode?
Yeah, one episode.
You need to keep watching it.
Well, I'm not avoiding. It's been, steering session. I get pretty wrapped up in things.
Yeah. But by the way, don't mention that because that's a particular word that I said we would not mention today, because if we do mention that word that starts with a P and ends with politics, then this might be your reaction.
Up down a tree with a herring. It can't be done.
Don't say that word.
What word?
I cannot tell. Suffice to say is one of the words the Knights of Neath cannot hear.
How can we...
So, Jason, that's the word you cannot hear.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll try to avoid it, even though it is Super Tuesday.
Well, that's what I didn't want to talk about was, you know who, he who shall not be named. But
he who shall not be named. Right. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so for our prayer today, I want to pray this prayer. It's a prayer for all people by St. Clement of Rome. Are you familiar with this prayer?
I don't know. Maybe when you start it. But
I think Clement was, particularly on the list you look at, the third bishop of Rome, I think. You got Linus in there somewhere.
I think he was the
too.
Fourth bishop of Rome. Peter, Linus, Cletus, Clement.
Cletus. Now that is a name right there.
I think he was from Hazard.
Yeah, that's right. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. We beg you, Lord, to help and defend us. Deliver the oppressed. Pity the insignificant. Raise the fallen. Show yourself to the needy. Heal the sick. Bring back those of your people who have gone astray. Feed the hungry. Lift up the weak. Take off the prisoner's chains. May every nation come to know that you alone are God, that Jesus Christ is your child, that we are your people, the sheep that you pasture. Amen. St. Clement of Rome, pray for us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I was talking a little bit last hour about this prayer of Azariah in the furnace. It's not in Protestant Bibles.
That's right.
I'm sure you grew up as a Baptist Christian, well aware, though, of the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Certainly, yeah.
And
I was just going to say that, and I haven't actually read the readings yet today. I tend to rush over here on days I have to leave my house at 10 after 6. But at St. Meinrad, when I was there, we used to have on Sunday mornings, every other Sunday, first and third Sunday of the Psalter, this is the Old Testament canticle, right?
Right, oh yeah.
And the Liturgy of the Hours for morning prayer. And the arrangement they used, that we used, and I don't think the monks used it, but in the seminary community, was just beautiful. And I always looked forward to that. And I still, every time I read or hear that canticle, I always think of that. I always hear it in that musical arrangement.
Oh, wow.
That's great, yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of pops in like a TV show theme or something. It's just an earworm that you can't get rid of.
Right. And particularly there's a priest, he was a seminarian at the time, now he's a priest for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, who often led it. And I always just hear him leading that. But, yeah.
Well, what I was seeing and what I like about that prayer, too, is, I'm not sure I've never read why it's excised from Protestant Bibles. I guess it's not in the Hebrew.
It's not in the Hebrew. There is a Hebrew text of Daniel which does not include it, and that is the one that that Jews accept as part of the Tanakh, the right word.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my understanding, that was the rule, you know, Luther applied to, it was to adopt the Hebrew canon in effect.
Well, as I said, it really is. It's appropriate for Lent, because Lent is really not just a time of penance for our own sins, but we should share a penitential attitude toward the sins of the collective, and the fact that we all bear that we can't escape our human community, and of course the church. And
no, we can't. And going back to the topic we're not talking about, but yeah.
That's right. We all share some of that. So anyway, I got this idea for a new game today that we can do, among other things.
Yeah.
And I got inspired on it because I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Quiz Show. Have you ever seen it? It's really, really good. I mean, it's typical Robert Redford in that it's not a high action-packed kind of film, if you've seen any of the films that he's directed. Very thought-provoking, though. And it was about the Quiz Show scandals, talking about TV back in the 50s. Yeah. Where you had this, Charles Van Doren, the son of this, they keep saying over and over during the film, of the Van Doren Van Dorens.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph Fiennes plays it, and he goes on this quiz show, and it ends up, the whole thing is rigged. They give him the answers in advance, and it's this whole question, is he going to come clean? You've got this bulldog of an attorney who's investigating, trying to nail television. From the very beginning, imagine that, television manipulating its audience through deceit.
Strange.
And the question, you know, the issue in the movie is the issue of integrity and honesty. And it got me thinking that, you know, when Hollywood does it right, they can really provoke thought on issues related to virtues.
Oh, yeah. It's a powerful medium, cinema is.
It really is. And so I thought what I put in this little powdered lemonade can that may still have traces.
Pink lemonade,
exactly,
ladies and gentlemen.
And may still have traces of pink lemonade powder in there, is that I've got slips of paper with a different virtue, not the classical virtues, but, various things related to human relationships and attitudes and behaviors, and you're going to pull a slip out. We'll do this before we go to a break.
Yeah. Well, I need some time to think about this early in the morning.
And that'll give you 3 minutes, and it'll also give our listeners If they think of a movie that best typifies that, they could call in and suggest one as well. And so we'll each pull a slip of paper out.
All right.
So we're going to test you here, okay? We'll see about
your movie. Is there a right answer?
No,
or is it, okay, I just have to come up with a movie.
No, there is no right answer.
Okay, good.
There are dumb answers, but there are
no stupid answers. Only stupid people who give answers.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. So we'll do that, and we'll get into some other things today as well. 5734 Bread 4. If you want to chime in, you can hear. Here's my little. I worked.
That's
really
not
hard.
A sound effect. That is really the.
I worked really hard on this last night, Jason, and this is all I could find. This lemonade can to put it in. So. I'm going to let you go ahead and draw your slip of paper, and you can go ahead and announce yours.
I'm sure Angie will appreciate you dumping all of her pink lemonade.
No, I drank the last little bit of it. There, put it in a glass.
So what do I do?
Go ahead and read what yours is on the air, and then when we come back from the break.
Fidelity.
Hmm. Very good. All right. So that'll give you something to think about. And the one I've pulled out is justice. Justice. See, that's a good one. So if you've got one that you can think of, 573-4-BREAD-4, when we come back from the break, you can give us your nominee, a movie that best typifies either fidelity or justice. 573-4-BREAD-4, you can call or text. You don't have to go on the air if you don't want to. You can call and chat Keith up if you want, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. So we'll get into all that in a minute. So, speaking of, you become the fallback person for your friends on politics. That's why you're burnt out on it?
No, it's not just, well, that's part of it. But also, it's just it's just on everybody's mind, and I'm around a political environment every day, and so it's literally the only thing anybody talks about.
I know, and I do a radio show, so I talk about it a lot, too.
Yeah.
Can we get to November already? Get it over with. We'll be back in a minute with my good friend Jason Hall. This is The Mike Allen Show. I still live with
my mom. Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Happy birthday to Roger Daltrey. My question of the day, what's your favorite song by The Who? The front man, 72 years old today, part of the British invasion. What's your favorite Who song? That Baba O'Reilly submitted by my friend Tom Shaughnessy. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Jason, a Who fan?
No, not particularly. Nothing against them. I don't want to offend anybody.
Not that there's anything wrong with The Who.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Here with my friend Jason Hall of the Catholic Conference of Kentucky, who made the early drive over from our state's capital to be here. And we're playing this game here, basically virtue and the movies. So you draw a slip of paper out, and with a particular type of virtue relationship sort of issue here. And what movie best typifies something good? So I drew the slip Justice, and if you've got one you want to call and nominate to best typify that, you can give me a call, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. So Justice, which is one of the four cardinal virtues, mm-hmm. Catholic Church, right? This understanding of the hinge virtues. The movie, two movies. One I saw recently, Selma.
I have not.
Selma, very, very good film about the Civil Rights March and the difficulties they went through. It was a little bit before my time, but very powerful. But the one I'm going to nominate or mention the most is Amazing Grace. Have you seen Amazing Grace?
No.
I'll see.
Sounds like I haven't seen any movies.
I know. Amazing Grace tells the story. You really need to see it because it tells the story of William Wilberforce. If you heard of Wilberforce, he was a British... Sure. politician, a devout Christian, evangelical, and was an abolitionist. And and in the film, he's portrayed by, I think it's Ian Gruffin, who's been in some of the what, the Fantastic Four movies or something. Anyway, he is this just relentless. You see how oftentimes he stands alone, facing great opposition in season and out of season, as this continual voice in the public square for the moral depravity of slavery. And it really ends up, I mean, there's probably maybe a little hagiography or whatever in the film, but I think people who knew Wilberforce, there were times he stood virtually alone, tirelessly, even though his own health was affected by it, because it consumed him, this drive and this desire. And when Great Britain got into war with France, all of a sudden he was viewed as a traitor because he was challenging the government and the British people to rise up to be the people that they should be, and so forth. And so it's a very, very inspiring film about when the faith is at its best in the public square.
Very good.
So you need to see it. So yours is Fidelity.
Fidelity. And this might be a cheap one, but it's the first one I thought of, and I can't think of another one. So it's not High Fidelity, by the way. But no.
Is that John Cusack? Yeah. And I never saw that. Jack Black. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. What I thought of was Mr. George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life, because he had all these familial commitments and had big dreams that he wanted to pursue. But he never pursued them, never went to college, never, built things as he wanted to do, never shook the dust of that crummy little town off his feet and saw the world because of the commitments he had to family. And he, of course, in the end, the whole point is he found joy in that, and how that his life had great meaning. But through the fidelity to his family that, he was in the, that he had done all that he had done. It's not only his family, but his community as well.
I'm sitting here thinking about even connections between, these two movies, obviously made in different eras, Amazing Grace and also It's a Wonderful Life. I think in both cases, for most of the film, there is a sense of that this virtue, whether it's the virtue of justice, the virtue of fidelity, is not going to be vindicated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, George Bailey comes to the place of desperation where it seems like he's wasted his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's made these decisions. Yeah. In the same way, in William Wilberforce in Amazing Grace, he is this voice that just seems to get no traction on this issue through the whole film. And it's only at the end, in both cases, where you see vindication.
Yeah. George Bailey actually is the whole climax of the film is where he's about to commit suicide.
Right.
And yeah.
Which shows you, I think, at times virtue is not for the faint of heart, because it can be a very dark and alienating experience sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a wow. So if you've got a suggestion, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. One thing we almost always talk about when you're on the program, Jason, of course, now that pitchers and catchers have reported, and
mm-hmm.
the Grapefruit League and the
Cactus League
have started up. The Reds now, our team, and the Cactus League used to be Plant City. And
still a little weird.
It is a little weird, yes.
In Arizona, but.
But I thought of you the other day, speaking of movies, because I happened upon Moneyball,
mm-hmm.
which was on, which is, you've seen that, right?
Of course, yeah.
I keep wanting to read the book. I've got the book. Have not read it, but the movie's good. And you talk about unwavering devotion to an idea. And this is, of course, this whole idea of sabermetrics and statistical probabilities and all that. Well, there's word now that There's a move, at least in some teams. I don't know if you saw that. I sent you an article about the Boston Red Sox and how they seem to be getting away now from sabermetrics and that sort of thing. And what the article is suggesting is there has to be a balance between just statistical analysis and other factors.
Mm-hmm. I can say I did not read the article, I have to admit, because I fell asleep when I got home last night. But I will say that, you know, this is something I know I've read a lot about and thought a lot about and talked over many years. But the one of the downsides to Moneyball, Moneyball is one of the books I've read in my life that probably I enjoyed the most and that changed my thinking in an area more than, you know, it's one of those great books in my life, I guess you could say.
So like St. Augustine's Confessions.
The Bible.
The Bible.
Art of the Deal and Moneyball, of course. So anyway, you know, I will say, so I did a lot to talk about what sabermetrics is for a broader audience. And what sabermetrics is, by the way, is the search for objective information about baseball. So much of baseball was dominated by weird ideas about how to evaluate players that really weren't predictive of whether a player would be successful. People would argue about who was a greater player than somebody because they tried harder or they showed up every day or what is meaningless stuff that everybody does. We're used to evaluate players. And so it's the idea to try to come up with a way to, beyond the statistics that are sometimes misleading, such as, say, RBI totals, which measures as much how well players get on base on your team rather than it does your own personal performance. The effort to try to really evaluate player performance and project team performance in a more objective and fruitful and accurate way. And so Moneyball did a lot to bring that idea to the masses. The downside, the bad side to Moneyball, the impression it gave all of its readers or most of its readers that was not really accurate was it overplayed, greatly over-dramatized the split between stats and scouts. That you have your stat heads and your scouts, and they, you know, and teams have to pick, and there's this huge war about who's gonna. Well, I don't think there's something to that, and certainly there were some old school scouts who didn't like the stat heads, and some stat heads who didn't respect guys who had been around the game a long time and really did know a lot about it. But it, when it comes to teams want information that helps them win. And the best teams, and for a long time, I mean, it's been a long time since there was fights in a front office over stats versus scouts. Teams make full use of the best information from both fields. They have a lot of scouts, and they have their statistical analysis office. Every front office now has fully developed both systems because you take all of that information together. If there's a delivery problem, for example, with a pitcher, if he has a bad delivery that's likely to lead to injury, the stats aren't going to show you that. The scout's going to tell you about that. Likewise, if the pitcher looks good and is athletic and whatever, but he just can't perform over time, you have to have the stats to tell you that. So anyway, it's both and. It's not either or. It's very Catholic in that sense.
Very Catholic. Very good. And as I would say, if you're a baseball fan or not, you'd still enjoy the film because I love the dynamic Brad Pitt's character and Jonah Hill, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
The interchange between the two of them, because Jonah Hill's the young, you know, Ivy League educated guy who's not sure he completely believes.
Yeah. Well, the book is much more, it's a nonfiction book. It's using the A's under Billy Beane as kind of an illustration of the sabermetric revolution, but of course the movie is much more about the drama of the 2002 Oakland A's.
I think so. And Philip Seymour Hoffman,
yes, of course,
my doppelganger, the late Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, he plays Art Howe, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Exactly.
It's really, really good. All right, we got to draw another slip of paper because we're going to go to a break again. Virtue in the movies, draw a slip of paper with a virtue out, announce it, and then you'll have time to think about it over the break.
Mm-hmm.
And our listeners can call in as well. So what'd you draw?
Honesty.
Honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Such a lonely word. Let's see. And I got faith. Faith.
All right. Faith.
All right. So that'll be, we'll let Roger Daltrey and the Who take us out. We'll be back in just a minute. 573-4-BREAD-4. If you want to nominate, 573-4-BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We'll be back.
Bread.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. Playing The Who is our bumper today in honor of Roger Daltrey, who's 72 years old, just bounced back from a bout of viral meningitis, still going strong. What's your favorite Who song? You can chime in, 573-4BREAD-4, call or text or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, here with my good friend Jason Hall, who is the executive director of the Catholic Conference of Kentucky, working on behalf of the Catholic bishops in the state of Kentucky on legislative aims, working to build the common good, dealing in that word that starts with a P and ends with politics that we're going to try to avoid today on Super Tuesday. Right. So, Jason, we drew a slip of paper out with a particular virtue on it, and you're supposed to pick a movie that manifests that particular virtue in an effective way. So you chose honesty. What movie have you come up with?
Well, my first thought was a little too obvious, Liar Liar by Jim Carrey, you know, who could not help but tell the truth, I suppose, because of, I can't even remember why, some spell cast upon him or something.
It's something to do with his little boy, I think.
Wish. The little boy made a wish there or something. There you go. And he couldn't. That's right. But then I thought of, this is actually a movie I used to love when I was, it's called Pillow Talk, starring Doris Day and Rock Hudson, 1959. And he is, he plays a songwriter and playboy who shares a party line with Doris Day, who's this very successful professional woman. And they are he's constantly wooing a girl over the telephone, and she gets very angry. And then they meet, and he realizes, you know, she's very beautiful, and so he adopts this persona of this country bumpkin who's new to New York City. And anyway, goes, and they eventually fall in love, and of course, as would happen in the real world, they have this huge falling out. And once she realizes that his whole thing has been a lie, and he realizes, you know, that he should have just been honest with her. Of course, being the movie, they make up and eventually
it all works out
at the end. But anyway, I was just thinking about that. I was trying to think of where the key lesson, you know, the key plot device is in effect, a lie that's told. And
very good. Pillow Talk,
1959.
Digging deep on that. But by the way,
also Thelma Ritter is in it. Tony Randall. It's very funny. Very funny.
I have never seen it. I'll have to go back and see it. By the way, our mutual friend Bob, who goes to the same parish where you attend Mass, he emailed and said that his daughter, Anna, said that on the issue of fidelity, that she suggests The Lion King.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because Simba comes back to be true to his kingdom.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got faith, and this is going to be, you know, I'm going to connect it here, but you were about to go with the Jim Carrey film. I'm going to go with one, The Truman Show, which is one of my favorite movies ever. And I'm not even a Jim Carrey fan.
It's a great movie, yeah.
It's so many different layers. But, you know, what is it that drives Truman? It is the growing, what begins with just a suspicion and then ultimately a conviction that there is something beyond Sea Haven. And it is that dream of Fiji, you know, and the girl that he falls in love with on the set, who is not an actor or an actress. You know, if you've seen the film, his whole life is a reality show. He doesn't know it, though. Everybody else is in the world of watching. He's in this fake world, domed in sky, all the rest. But there's an actress, not scripted, who falls in love with him and he with her and kind of messes up the whole apple cart. They yank her away and tell him that she's been taken to Fiji. And so he dreams. It's what drives him ultimately to seek, even though he has this fear of the water, to set sail across this sea And he, of course, runs into the end of the studio. And but it's he's driven by faith in its own way.
Yeah, no, that's a great example. Yeah.
All right, so 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call in. 573-4-BREAD-4. We could do it without the commercial break, and we could just draw one and see how spontaneous we can be.
Well, we could if you wanted to.
You want to give it a shot?
So
we
crazy.
Could try
sure,
that.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a couple more of these.
We can also do...
Okay. I know last time we didn't get to do Dial Catechism, and your fiance was very disappointed.
Yes.
We don't want to disappoint her.
I think she responded to the who question, by the way.
Oh, she did. I need to give her answer on that. Okay, so
Wisdom.
And I got motherhood. I don't guess Mommy Dearest would probably... Maybe the no wire hangers.
Carrie.
Yeah. Then we could do the reverse of this, like the anti virtue, the
vice.
The
I
vice.
It's called. Yeah.
Thank you
vice.
Very much. Okay. Do you need time, or you think you got one? Motherhood.
I'm gonna. You know, if you make me do something on the spot, it's gonna be like a Star Trek movie.
I think I got one for motherhood.
Okay.
As good as it gets.
Okay.
You've seen that. Yeah. Helen Hunt.
Sure.
Jack Nicholson, you know, he's just this deplorable character. Kind of reminds me of somebody's running for president right now. He's a deplorable character in the way he treats. But he also is drawn to her. But she is, what he sees beautiful in her, really, among other things, is her great devotion to her son.
Yeah.
Who is sick. And she's a single mom. You know, trying to make her way as a waitress and caring for her son. So I think that's a beautiful image of motherhood.
Absolutely.
In the film. All right.
Well, I'm going to say Star Trek Generations, which...
what was your virtue again?
Wisdom.
Wisdom. There we go.
And I say that because that is the film, and we're the only film in which Captains Kirk and Picard meet. But... anyway, there's a lot in there about the about time, and the, you know, Shatner, of course, is this great experienced captain. But the great lesson that Picard learns in the whole thing is that time is, because he's told by Malcolm McDowell, who plays the villain, that time is a predator that stalks us. And, you know, the great lesson is no, time is a companion that journeys with us.
Wow, I have not seen any of the Star Trek. None of
it. But anyway, it's two experienced captains, but the one who has the great insights, you know. So,
and that's Shatner.
And then, of course, you also have Whoopi Goldberg, who's like hundreds of years old and has.
Whoopi Goldberg is in a Star Trek movie.
She played. She was in the series Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Was she really?
Yeah.
See, I haven't seen any. Not only have I never seen any of the Star Trek movies, I've never seen a single whole episode of any Star Trek.
Well, she was not a regular cast member. She was a recurring cast member, played Guinan, who is a of some species that lives for centuries and centuries. And so.
Well, you mentioned your fiance, by the way, Jessica, and she did respond to our question about Roger Daltrey's 72nd birthday and your favorite Who song. She said, I saw the musical Tommy on Broadway with my dad in the 90s and listened to the album over and over. It made my mom crazy. Squeeze Box is probably her favorite song. By Daltrey.
All right. Maybe I didn't know that about her.
That could be at your
wedding
reception
everything.
Or something. Hey, one other thing we didn't have a chance to talk about since the last time you were on the program, and of course you're a lawyer, great legal mind, the passing of Antonin Scalia.
Mm-hmm.
What was your reaction when you heard that? I mean, pretty fascinating figure. I'm sure no matter how people felt about him, he was a giant of jurisprudence.
Yeah, he really was, and some people have tried to say, you know, who don't like him have tried to say, oh, he wasn't that great, you know, because his opinions were quote-unquote wrong or whatever. But no, I think, you know, certainly as a law students all have probably a special place in their heart. Former lawyers who went to law school within the last 20 years or so have a special place in their heart for Scalia, because reading his dissents is about the most interesting reading you ever do for 3 years in law school. And they were wonderful. I mean, he brought that real biting wit, but also, you know, very razor sharp logic to his dissents. And it's weird. I would say that something that hasn't been remarked on a lot, people have talked about how often he wrote dissents, but really, I think his positive legacy is as a dissenter. I think the majority opinions he drafted, certainly he has some very solid opinions that are very important, particularly in criminal procedure. I think there's a case, I can't remember the name of it, but involving search and seizure, that is one of the big search and seizure cases, and he wrote the majority on that. It's very significant. But also, you know, when we talk about the bad side of Scalia, from our perspective, it's in his majority opinions. It's actually the ones he wrote for the court. You know, we've talked a lot on this program about religious freedom and, you know, RFRA, and well, the RFRA was needed because
Religious Freedom
Restoration Act was needed at the federal level and at all the state levels because of a horrible decision by the Supreme Court in 1990, in which Scalia wrote the majority opinion. In the Hobby Lobby case, Scalia wrote a concurring opinion in which he reiterated his belief that absent RFRA, the Constitution does not provide any protection from a generally applicable law on religious freedom ground, First Amendment grounds, or religion, free exercise of religion. So I don't know. I think that's kind of, I mean, a lot of conservatives like him. I think it's not all good. There's much good, but it's a mixed, you know, as with any human being.
Yeah, and when we come back from the break, I want to just mention, too, really quickly, what during the whole season of his death here, this whole employment division versus Smith case, I'm not agreeing with Scalia on it, but I think I see what he's saying and why RFRA, well, I think he would applaud RFRA. But we'll get to that in a minute. You want to draw one more time?
Oh, so much pressure this morning.
I know, so okay. Much pressure. By the way, I thought of another great motherhood movie.
All right.
And that is Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah.
Sally Field, you know, life is like a box of chocolates. What'd you draw?
Hope.
Hope, and I got generosity.
Mm.
I know we got Kathy calling in on line one. Keith, she's going to have to wait till we get back from the break here in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. I'll be back here with my good friend Jason Hall.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Happy birthday, Roger Daltrey, 72. Been playing Who bumper music today. We got Kathy, who's been waiting on hold here as I'm in the studio with my friend Jason Hall. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I'm always a day late and a dollar short because it takes me a minute to get my phone. But I'm talking about Justice Scalia. I watched his funeral mass twice now on YouTube. And then I wanted to recommend that people watch just the liturgy of the word through the homily if they're ever feeling down. It's just a wonderful segment. And that can be seen on YouTube. But as far as movies, I'm still back on Justice and Fidelity. The Story of Us, you may be too young to remember that, but it's a wonderful film on fidelity and how this couple comes to an impasse in their marriage, and there's a dialogue there, monologue, really, that just, I saved it, and it's just good for couples. Then on Justice, I think if you're talking about the state justice, the movie this, In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. And those are my three inputs for the day.
All right. Well, very good, Kathy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah,
some
good. I've not seen In Cold Blood, but what was the other one that she mentioned?
Story of Us.
Story of Us. Mm-hmm. I've seen parts of that. Bruce Willis, I think, and Michelle Pfeiffer mm-hmm. kind of details their marriage over the years. But did you see the Scalia funeral?
I did, yeah. I watched the homily.
Oh, yeah.
I watched the homily, yeah. That was something, yeah.
That was really, really good. I was very impressed with Father Paul Scalia.
Very much so, yeah.
Anyway, what I was saying about Scalia is that he very much a believer in the democratic process, and I think that was his rationale. He was a very, I guess, what you would call a strict originalist with the Constitution, and felt like, hey, if you want these religious freedom protections, you got to, on a generally applicable law, you got to bring it about through the legislative process. But you're not buying that.
No, I'm not buying that, because the First Amendment is a limit on the legislative process. Congress shall make no law. And he talked about that in plenty of other contexts.
Right.
He understood the First Amendment as a limit on the power of Congress. And
one of the issues that he sometimes would bring up is, let's say, okay, like polygamy among the LDS folks back before, you know, in the 1800s. Why weren't they exempt from that generally applicable law?
Well, yeah, that's the argument. I mean, I would argue that either maybe, I mean, you would have to make the argument that the government has a compelling interest.
Right.
And, you know, I would say in the current, our current view of marriage and the law, that government has no compelling interest in what marriage is and in affirming a particular type of marriage. My argument would be you don't have. Under that legal, if you go there, you know, if you accept that the government has a legal, has a compelling interest to uphold a certain form, you know, to prefer, if you will, advance, promote a particular institution, such as traditional, you know, marriage as traditionally understood as important to society, then that's why the Mormon cases should have been decided the way they were. If you say, no, it's all about personal fulfillment, well, then the Mormon should have won those cases under the First Amendment. That's my opinion, whichever direction. Those cases were not decided. I know what he's saying. Those cases are difficult because when you read them, it's very clear that they're being decided not so much on careful constitutional analysis as a, what are you crazy? These people are freaks kind of attitude on the
right.
part of the court. And it's 19th century. And, you know, this was a time when Mormons, I mean, there was a governor who put out an extermination order. You know, you can't be prosecuted if you kill a Mormon kind of. I mean, this was not a time when this was careful, deliberate weighing of the First Amendment, you know.
Do you think that he was sensitive to the charge that he, as a devout Catholic, brought his faith to the bench, and perhaps that could have caused him to insensitivity to that overreach on the other side with, like, the religious freedom issues?
I don't know. I can't really say. I would not. I don't think so, because I don't think he ever really had a problem or felt that he had a problem, based on what he said anyway, publicly, about you know, that somehow the position of his church, like, he felt that he decided things according to the law, and he certainly decided things, I think, the way that the church would have, you know, he wasn't always with the church, so to speak, in outcomes. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's something that I would have no way of knowing.
He was very, I think, I kind of made the argument that he considered himself as a justice, not to be pro-life. He was a constitutionalist, and
right.
So whatever the, you know, that was the perspective that he brought. He, as a Catholic, he was pro-life, but as a justice,
yeah,
he wasn't.
Right, and but he also said, you know, when it came to the death penalty, he felt that if he felt that it was, that a Catholic could not in good conscience allow the death penalty to proceed, then he would resign from the court. I know he said that one time.
Yeah, that's true.
So he did feel that he needed, he did have a sense of not participating morally in something that was completely intrinsically evil.
An unforgettable figure. And I want us to get to Dalai Catechism, but real quick, do you have anything on hope, or are you like...
Yeah, I did have something. Nothing. I did have something on hope, and now it has slipped my mind.
Well, I'll see if I...
Go ahead.
For generosity, I'm going to go with Gran Torino. If you've seen Gran Torino, which I think is a beautiful film in terms of moving beyond somebody's surface exterior to all of a sudden over time, and finally, you know, at the very end, where after his death, if you've seen the film, you know, Clint Eastwood's character basically in a very, almost in a cruciform kind of position, gives his life for this Hmong people, and at the reading of his will, his beautiful car, you know, goes to the young man who he has befriended and mentored along the way. So that's what popped in my mind.
So, my movie for hope is, and this is, I thought there's obviously a lot of movies where our intrepid hero battles impossible odds, but that's not, I wanted to go something a little more down to earth. So I thought The Bells of St. Mary's, because I talked about It's a Wonderful Life earlier, and The Bells of St. Mary's, Frank Capra's other
never seen
masterpiece. Well, anyway, it is very much, so I believe Bing Crosby, right, and Ingrid Bergman,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And also the guy, what's his name, that plays Clarence in It's a Wonderful Life, plays a rich business fellow in kind of a Mr. Potter type in Bells of St. Mary's. But anyway, it's about a school, a parish school where, you know, Bing Crosby plays the pastor. And there's this school that has a lot of troubled youngsters in it. You know, and it's just this, priest and this, this nun who runs the school, played by Ingrid Bergman. And it's kind of like, I think when we talk about Christian hope, like that's what sustains them. I mean, they, there's no glorious sacrifices being made. There's no, you know, angels coming down and showing someone what the world would be like if they hadn't been born. There is this, you know, hope motivated by faith that, you know, these kids mm-hmm. are worth it. They're worth the effort and the time. And kind of the climax of the film is when the guy, you know, the rich guy, is based on nostalgia from his own youth, is convinced to support, like to save the school with a donation kind of thing. And it's not a huge
very
transformation.
Good.
It's just a...
Well, I have to see it, definitely. Well, we got about 3 minutes. Let's spin Dial a Catechism wheel. Let's make sure we get a good paragraph here. Random.org, a number between 1 and 2865. Our number is 2787. Late in the catechism, on the issue of prayer, the fourth pillar of the catechism.
About the Our Father.
Uh-huh, here we go.
When we say Our Father, our, in quotes, we recognize first that all His promises of love announced by the prophets are fulfilled in the new and eternal covenant in His Christ. We have become His people, and He is henceforth our God. This new relationship is the purely gratuitous gift of belonging to each other. We are to respond to grace and truth given us in Jesus Christ with love and faithfulness.
One of the things that I love about the Our Father, Jason, is that understanding that Christ is our brother and that through Him we enter into this relationship with God, this family relationship mm-hmm. through Christ. And and there's this thing that Jesus says, He says, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now, if you get your mind around that,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. That's heavy, Doc.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, your Baptist tradition, you'd pray the Our Father, right?
Sure, yeah.
The Lord's Prayer.
Lord's Prayer, yeah. I don't know. We didn't really pray it in the communally the way, you know, we do as Catholics, but even though it's very clearly, you know, it's designed to be a communal prayer. I mean, it's Our Father, not My Father.
That's why we do all that hand-holding.
Yeah. some folk do.
Some folks do. I always hate that.
I know. Well, I don't. It's a little pet peeve of mine where, you know, it's a personal choice, and yet half the time somebody reaches over and grabs your hand if you have your hands folded. But anyway, that's a topic for another
show and another day. But, we say Our Father, we have become His people, and He is henceforth our God. So we have a responsibility too for each other in our prayers.
Yep, exactly.
Well, Jason, it's always fun. Do you like our new game?
I do. It's kind of stressful because not knowing the virtues, not having time to think, it's this early in the morning. Perhaps if it was later in the day, it'd be easier.
Well, you got to earn your pay.
Yeah.
Coming on the program, you know, mm-hmm. nothing's free.
You didn't even make me any pink lemonade.
That's true. I drank the last of it last night. Mm-hmm. Anyway, blessings to you and to Jessica.
And to you.
A great rest of your day. We'll be back tomorrow by God's grace. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.